So, since I last saw you all, I've getting old. Had 60th birthday, and I heard in Malaysia you retire at 57. So I want to retire. Can I retire, Venerable? No. Oh. But that's when you become monk, the older you get, the harder you have to work. I'm only beginning to be venerable now. When you're 70, you're venerable. When you're 80, very venerable. 90, extremely venerable. So I say life begins at 70 for holy men. But I still have lots of good energy, and it's wonderful to come back again. I do get very, very busy these days overseas, so if I can't come as often as possible, it means that I'm helping somewhere else. I was telling the Venerable that recently I was in Indonesia, just in the end of March, giving many talks there. And when I gave a talk in Medan, that's in North Sumatra, the MC told me I created traffic jam. 2 kilometers around, people couldn't come through. And they said 3,500 came for that talk, and they said that they had to give tickets, now very cheap tickets, it's only to make sure that people were actually going to come. But the tickets for my event sold out in 8 hours. But Lady Gaga's took 2 days to sell out. So Buddhism is more popular than Lady Gaga. And when Lady Gaga, they can entertain you, but I make you laugh more. And afterwards, you go back with some good teachings in your heart. In fact, the Venerable said that you must keep coming back. Nola, I'm trying to get rid of you to make you all enlightened so you don't have to come back ever again. But some of you have been coming back to listen to my talks for years and years and years. If I was a teacher and you kept coming back to my class, I'd get kicked out of the school. You're very slow learners. But learning about life does take a long time. And today we're talking about learning how to let go of all that clinging so you can live peaceful and happy lives. It's the Venerable saw me arrive today. You know, I came at the airport and then in the KLIA Express, which is very close to here, and you saw my baggage. My baggage is just one small bag. That's all. It's like smaller than your shopping bag there. And I'm coming from overseas. I don't know why you need a big bag to come just for the evening. So I remember, just like birds, birds can fly from country to country, from continent to continent. But have you ever seen a bird carrying a suitcase? No, birds fly free, just like the monks, free and easy with no baggage. That's what we mean by not clinging to things. I know people ask me when I go overseas, now, Venerable Ajahn Brahm, do you need an attendant? And I say, I have an attendant. Whether it's in Malaysia Airlines, MH or SQ, I've got about 12 attendants called flight attendants. They look after me. And here and there, everybody's look aftering you. So you don't need too much, especially as a monk. This is how we teach people to have no clinging, by looking how monks live, with very few possessions. Now, I'm going to tell you an interesting story I haven't told for a long time, about when you let go, when you have no clinging, how you are more safe. Many years ago, I was told the answer to one of the problems I thought about when I was a child. When I was a child, I learned that birds sleep up in the trees at night. And they don't have beds, they just sleep standing up on the branches and twigs of the trees. And even if there's a wind and that tree sways back and forth, I've never seen a bird fall off. I know many people who fall out of bed, but not birds. They always manage to stay on the tree at night, even when it's very windy. How do they do that? I was told by a person who studied biology that when the bird sits on top of the branch or the twig, the more it relaxes, the more its claws close up. It relaxes a lot and its claws close up a lot. The more it relaxes, the more the claws tighten on the branch or the twig. In other words, the more it lets go, the more stable it is. And in the morning when it wakes up, it has to put forth a lot of effort to release its grip, because the natural state of the bird's claw when it lets go is to close up, which is why the bird can have a good night's sleep without falling off. If you were born as a bird, some of you worry so much you would not be able to close your claws and you'll fall up, so off. So it's a good job you're a human being and not a bird. But it was telling me how when you really let go, when you have no clinging, things go very well. When you worry, that's when they go wrong. Now it's very interesting why that happens. I also learned that when I was a small child and got my first bicycle. When I started riding my first bicycle, maybe I was 8 or 9 years of age, I was so afraid of falling off. I gripped the handlebars till my knuckles went white, and I kept on falling off. I was so scared, I was stiff, and I couldn't adjust my body to the turns and everything else which I needed to accommodate to. That's why I kept falling off, because I was afraid and became very stiff. After a while, you learn how to let go and relax. And the more I relaxed, the less I fell off. And that also told me a lot about life. Where we cling to our fears and worries, we keep falling off on the bicycles of life. Which is why the last time I was here, which was only a couple of weeks ago, helping out the Buddhist Gem Fellowship. I just help out everybody. I'm like a monk for hire. Have mouth, will travel. Whenever you want to give a talk, I'll be there for you. But they asked me to give a series of talks with the title, Don't Worry, Be Happy. And when I looked at that title, I realized that what worry means is looking at the future with a negative mind, thinking about all the things which might go wrong in your life. That's worry. The opposite of worry is looking at the future and thinking about all the things which might go right. Looking at the future with a positive mind. I call that hope. So I changed the title of the talks from Don't Worry, Be Happy to Don't Worry, Be Hopey. Thereby creating a new word for the English language. Hopey is the opposite of worry. So don't think, oh, something's going to go wrong. This is terrible. I'm going to get sick. The biopsy is going to come back. I'm going to die of cancer. I'm not sure if you, I told this the last time I heard, I was here. But did you hear about the man who went to the doctor and the doctor said his cancer was terminal? And what most people ask is, well, how long? How long have I got? And the doctor replied, 10. He said, 10 what? 10 years, 10 months, 10 days? And the doctor continued, 9, 8, 7, 6. That's terminal. But when we worry too much like that, it creates such a bad state of mind that means the body gets tense, and that's what kills us more than anything else, the worry. So that is why it's much better to be hopey rather than be worried. So we do hope for the best and become a person with a very positive mind for the future. That is letting go of fear. Now sometimes I wonder, why do people cling to fear? One of the reasons why is because you enjoy it. That's why people go to all these theme parks where you go in ghost rides or you go on these death jumps. You go in these towers and you hurtle down like to your death, or you go bungee jumping. Have you ever gone bungee jumping before? Why do people do that? Scares them to death. Why? Because we like to be afraid. And that's why we like to worry. Do you watch soap opera? I think one day we must start Buddhist soap opera. I've got all these great ideas. You know, for one of the things we were talking earlier about, you know, monks get so busy these days. It's okay giving Dharma talks, but there's many other things. We don't really need to do all the chanting and all the other things we do. So in Australia, I wanted to try and modernize Buddhism. You said we should bring Buddhism into the 21st century and teach it for modern people. So I wanted to start the first Buddhist drive-through Vihara. You're busy. You haven't got all day to come to the temple. So you can just drive through, and at the entrance you can put your order in, whether you want sort of Pirit chanting, and whether it's for your business, your health, or your marriage, whether you want some holy water. If you do, there'll be a little spout which comes out, which will drench you. Whether you want questions about meditation, you can press the little button, then you go to the window and you get the answer, then you pay at the next window. You know, just like Makwihara, we'll call that. Be very convenient. And then you won't have to bother the monks all the time. We can meditate more. You know, that was a bit of a funny sort of story, but you know, in Japan they've done something like that. They found it so difficult to get the priests to go to funerals. They were always very busy. So what they did, you know, being Japan, and being that there's so many Buddhists there, and they love Buddhists to do funeral ceremonies, they have a robot monk. It's true. They've got a robot monk. And when the family come in, that monk, if it's Mahayana, they can push the Mahayana button and it does Mahayana chanting. If it's Theravada, Sri Lankan style, Thai style, Burmese style. If it's Vajrayana chanting, they can do that too. And it's always perfect. And this was no joke, I read this in an article. After the ceremony is over, just to make it interesting, the monk, because it's a robot, actually levitates and goes through a trap door in the city with all this dry ice. It's very, very good, you know, special effects. People love it. So one day that will happen to us. We'll have robot monks up here and giving the talks and giving the blessings and everything else, while the monks can have a nice quiet time. Remember, you shouldn't cling to your monks. Let us go sometimes. This is a meditation story. Because you know that monks, we're supposed to live peaceful lives, relaxed lives, where we don't do very much. And that's why there was a story of somebody who called up the temple. And the monk answered. And the person said, Reverend Sir, can you please come to my house today to do a ceremony? I need you to do some chanting for me. And the monk replied, I'm sorry, sir, I'm busy. And the man replied, what are you doing? And the monk said, I'm doing nothing. That's what monks are supposed to do. You know, we're supposed to teach by example, relax, don't stress out. So I'm doing nothing today. And the layperson was wise enough to say, very good, you know, you do nothing, do your meditation, well done. So he hung up. He rang the temple the next day, got the same monk. Reverend Sir, can you please come to my house today to do that chanting? And the monk said again, I'm sorry, I can't come, I'm busy. What are you doing, said the caller. I'm doing nothing, said the monk. But that's what you were doing yesterday. Yes, said the monk, but I'm not finished yet. I love that story. Get nothing out of the way first, and then do something. Stop clinging to all the activity of life. Why is it that people are so busy? Because they like it, that's why. It's very hard to do nothing. Even I've been telling many, many people, even here, when you go home tonight, all you housewives, when you go home tonight and you look at all the dishes in the sink needing to be washed, don't wash them yet. Have a look to see how many clean cups and saucers and dishes and plates, how many clean ones there are in the shelf. If there are more clean ones than dirty ones, quit while you're ahead. Leave it, for goodness sake. Otherwise, the other little saying, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. That's very profound. One of these nights you are going to die. Now because, oh, you have to go now, very good, please, have a nice flight. And please don't get blown up in flight. Sometimes people are, they're very afraid of the monks, because now this is valuable property, and we've got so few monks, we've got to look after our monks. And that's why many people in Australia, my disciples and followers there, they don't like me flying. They don't like me flying because they're afraid that sooner or later, it's the law of probabilities. You know, there may be a crash or a terrorist explosion. But I've been telling a lot of people that if you are killed at 30,000 feet in terrorist explosion, you're very lucky. You are very lucky. It's the three advantages. The three benefits of dying in aircraft explosion at 30,000 feet. Advantage number one, instant cremation. Have you ever arranged a funeral for your mother or father? Wow, it takes days and days and days to organize. And then you have to organize all the food for all the family and friends and even people you don't know who come in and say hello, you have to feed them. It takes days and days to organize, always a big headache. If you die in aircraft explosion, no headache at all. It's done on the spot, very efficient. Number two, how much do funerals cost in Malaysia? Very expensive. If you die in aircraft explosion, you don't pay nothing. Also, actually, you get money back from compensation. Family make money. But best of all, Advantage number three, if you die at 30,000 feet, you're so close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. I'm not afraid of dying at 30,000 feet. You shouldn't be either. You get three advantages. So now look, so you don't worry about the future. You let go of these things and let go of all your fear about the future. What was it that last year people were worrying about 2012, and here it is? Are you worried that this will be the end of the world? The last year of planet Earth. And what is it, the 10th of December? Was that the day it was supposed to end? 21st of December. How come you all know that? You don't have to worry at all because you're Buddhist. The reason why Buddhists don't have to worry, because this is not 2012. The Buddhist calendar is 2555. It's the Christian calendar is 2012. So only the Christians die. Buddhists, Muslims, we're still alive. Well, don't worry at all about this. And anyway, when I said this in Jakarta, this got in Compass, the daily newspaper, because they interviewed me, they came to one of my talks, and they said that even in a place like Indonesia, many people get worried. And I said, no, this is 2555, 555, lucky strike, lucky number. It'd be a very lucky year, 255. And because I was in Thailand for many years and can speak Thai, the number five in Thai, you know what number five is in Thai? Ha. Yeah, so this is two, ha ha ha. This would be a very funny year. So we should let go of clinging to all this painful stuff of the future. And also let go of clinging to all the painful stuff of the past. Oh, are you still angry at what your husband did? Even sometimes years ago, they're still angry. You know that some people are angry what other countries did to them. And it wasn't them, it was their grandparents were fighting about something and they're still angry. Can't we let that go? Let the past disappear so we can be free in the present moment and enjoy our lives. Someone calls you a dog. It's a bad word to say. Now let's make it more interesting. Call you camel. Is that worse? Dog, camel, cow. Okay, I know another funny story about that. I read this in Air Asia magazine. There was a man on the aircraft sitting next to parrot. A parrot was on the aircraft. And you know what it's like? The flight attendants come and say, do you want anything to drink? And a parrot said to this flight attendant, yeah, give me a whiskey, you cow. Wow, he really insulted the flight attendant. And the flight attendant was so confused, she went away without asking the other man what he wanted and came back with a whiskey. So he said, attendant, can I have please a cup of coffee, please? And by that time, the parrot had downed his whiskey and said to the flight attendant, and bring me another one, you dog. Wow, that was really rude. But it so confused the flight attendant came back with another whiskey for the parrot and forgot the coffee again. So this man thought, well, I might try the parrot method of getting a drink on this airline. So he told the flight attendant, and bring me a coffee, you know, you cow. Really bad speech. few seconds later, two male flight attendants came, picked the two of them up, opened the emergency door and threw them out. And as they were falling, the parrot said to this man, "You really should watch your speech if you can't fly." That was okay. But anyway, so what they call you a cow or a dog or a camel? So what? There's no problem there as long as you don't cling to it. What do I mean, not clinging to it? Most people, they call you a dog. And you think, why did he call me a dog? I am not a dog. That's the wrong thing to say to me, that I'm a dog. And if you're wise, you realize they've just called you a dog three more times. Every time you think about it, they're calling you a dog again. This is why we suffer, because we don't know how to let it go. We cling and cling and cling. Even somebody has cheated us and hurt us in the past, we can't stop thinking about it. That is the clinging which causes us suffering. We just don't know how to let it go. And when we cling to the pain of the past like that, no wonder we have unhappy lives. So please let it go. If they say something bad, let it go straight away. That's why you have two ears for, one to go in, one to go out. They call you a dog, it goes straight out. But they call you, oh, you're such a wonderful monk. That's why I put my finger over my ear. They say I'm a wonderful monk, so that means it stays inside. So just like this talk this evening, if there are any complaints, please see the Chief Reverend. Any compliments, please come and see me. Why not? You know, it is much better if you are going to cling to the happy memories of your past. How many of you got photograph albums at home? Many of you. How many got photographs on the wall of your home? Many of you. I've been to many people's houses, and I usually see the photograph of when they get married. You know, they got the marriage photograph, remember that one? And they got the photograph of when they're on holiday on some wonderful destination. They got the photograph of when they graduated from college or school. I've seen all those wonderful photographs, but I've never yet seen a photograph of your divorce. I've never seen a photograph of you going to work stuck in the traffic. On holiday, yes, not going to work. I've never seen a photograph of doing homework at college. Only when you graduate, that's the only photograph you take. I've never seen any photograph of you in hospital sick. Because we only have happy photographs. Why do we only have happy photographs on our walls in enough photographic albums? The reason is because it encourages us, it makes us happy, it gives us good energy, so we can live our life in peace, happiness, harmony, and we have more energy to do things in life. We don't get so depressed. Imagine going to a person's house and you've got a photo of their first divorce in the lawyer's office or in court. You see photographs of them, you know, in the traffic jam or the red lights, photographs of them, you know, when they're in hospital, photographs of all their unhappy memories. That would be a very depressing place to live in, wouldn't it? But there is such a photograph album, and that's a photographic album between your ears. Your memory. There you keep all the bad photographs. of what your wife said to you this morning, of what your kids did, you know, what person who cheated you or hurt you. Why do we keep the bad photographs? Because we're stupid, that's why. Please throw away the bad memories and just keep the good ones instead. That's called letting go of clinging. Clinging to the pain of the past. But how do you do that? It's very difficult for people to do. You know why? Because we like thinking about the pain of the past. We're weird. But it's much better to be peaceful and happy. So if you really do want to let go of the past, this is the method which I've been teaching to psychologists all over the world. You know, Buddhist monks, we teach psychology to others. The last time I was here, only 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was a gentleman, I'm not sure if he's here this evening, from a very wealthy family, who got depressed and decided to go to see Jon Kabat-Zinn. He was a psychology professor who started mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, MBCT, which is a big buzzword in modern psychology, based on Buddhist meditation. That's all it is, Buddhist meditation. But if you call it Buddhist meditation, only the Buddhists will come. So in order to make it user-friendly, you know, for marketing purposes, change the name and it sells. So, that's what he did, and he's become really, really famous for teaching what you learn here. So he went over to the United States, you know, had to pay a lot of money to see the main fellow who began this, and then he checked into the Mayo Clinic. That's the clinic where all the film stars and, you know, very, very wealthy people check into, you know, to get rid of his depression. And he told me when he went in there, he found all of these professors and psychologists, they were all Buddhists. And he realized, my goodness, I spent all this money, traveled all the way to New York, and I could have learned it all here in KL for free. Because you don't have to pay to get into here. That's the trouble. Because we don't charge, you think it's no good. So these days when people actually call me up, how much does it cost to come to the talk this evening? I never say it's free. Never ever say these talks are free. If you say they're free, people think they're not worth anything. So instead we say they're priceless. Marketing again, just change the name, means the same. But it has much better. These are priceless talks at the temple. So he went all that way and he found out he could learn the same right here. And indeed I do teach many psychologists. And one thing which I taught them, which is going around Australia like wildfire, is how to let go of the pain and the guilt of your past. You know, you may have done some bad thing, other people have done bad things to you, and you still haven't got rid of it. You still haven't let it go. And it's eating you inside like a mental cancer. If that's you, this is what you must do tonight. We all know that you have to acknowledge it, bring it up first of all. So this is where most psychologists agree with me. You have to write it down, exactly what happened. Because that is acknowledging it, bringing it to the surface, admitting it in detail. Now, where I added something to the usual way of doing things is the type of paper you should use to write down the painful things of your past. The correct paper to use is the paper we call in Malaysia toilet paper. And the best pen to use is a brown pen. So you write down all the terrible things you've done or the things which have happened to you in brown pen on toilet paper. Psychologically, according to science, that means you're associating what you're writing down with the usual thing which goes on top of toilet paper. Stinky, smelly stuff which nobody wants to keep. How many of you keep your toilet paper? After using it, you put it in your pocket to keep it for another occasion. I know that during the global financial crisis, and even now, I'm not sure how the economy is going here in Malaysia, but apparently in Greece, all the companies are asking their employees to use both sides of the toilet paper to save money. Well, it's a recycling. You know, we have to conserve resources, so use both sides. But you can't do that, can you? So you associate what you're writing down with something which you shouldn't keep and should be thrown away. So you write it down on toilet paper in brown ink. Then you read it. And then you do the Buddhist ceremony called letting go. You take the toilet paper to where it belongs, which is in the toilet. You put it in the bowl with the writing of all the bad, terrible things which have happened to you. And then you press this magic button and all this water comes and all the pain of your past goes swirling around and round the bend, gone forever. You are free. It's called letting go. Because just to say letting go, you can't do it. You need a ceremony, something physical, which is similar. You know, just like getting married. You can't say, I'm going to marry you. You've got to go to a ceremony. Even when you die, you've got to do a ceremony. Becoming a monk, you have to do a ceremony. Letting go, you do a ceremony. Press the button, and it all goes round and out again. Bye-bye. The pain of my past. That's so popular in Australia. There's many pipes which are blocked because of my method. So much toilet paper goes down there now because people got lots of pain, but they feel much better afterwards. But seriously, it works. Because it's funny, you remember it. That's my trick, to make you laugh so it actually gets in here. Now you do it and you find it's not such a joke after all. It's a very powerful way of not clinging to the pain of the past by associating it with excrement, stuff you should let go of, and doing a ceremony, physical, which helps you let go of the emotion of the past. So you're free. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we didn't cling to that pain of the past? Now those are the main possessions we should let go of. Fear of the future and guilt or anger to the past. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you were free of all that? You have a much, much happier life. But it's not just letting go of those things. We have to let go of our poor children. You know, sometimes, you know, the children are still living in the house, you know, just a mum and dad are feeding them, and they're over 40 years of age. Come, it's time for them to go. Come on, get out. Even birds, like nature. In birds, in nature, when they sit on those eggs for such a long time, if any of you getting sore bottom sitting here just for, no, 50 minutes. Imagine what it's like to be a bird. You've got cushions, it's flat. The eggs are all round and bumpy. Imagine those birds, what their sore bottom is going to be like after a little while. But they will sit there to look after their children. And when those children are hatched out of the egg, they work so hard feeding them. Doesn't matter how many things they feed those birds, they still want more. You know, they're black holes. They're vacuum cleaners. They suck up whatever you give them. And then they teach them how to fly. And once the young birds learn how to fly, that's it. Get out, mum and dad are going. But why are we so attached to our children? Sometimes it's good, you know, to let them go as soon as you possibly can. Don't cling, off you go. Now's your chance to live your life. But we cling sometimes too much. That's one of the reasons why we can't let people go. And not just our children, sometimes our parents, our loved ones. I often said the greatest act of love is to let somebody go, especially when they're sick and dying. When you think about it, we all got to die. But why is it that people stay in their hospital beds day after day after day, feeling sicker and sicker and sicker? One of the reasons is, well, actually, I'll give you the story which I learned, one of the problems of dying. I was counseling this young couple, Steve and Jenny. They were Caucasians living in Perth, Australia. Steve was a very fit and healthy guy. He had a business, white water rafting, going around the world, taking people on holidays to exotic locations and teaching them this wonderful adventure sport of white water rafting. And he was only about 38, 39 when he developed terminal cancer. There was no cure for him. So I was counseling him day after day until it got very close to his death. And I went to visit him one day, and he was in his bed feeling terrible. And I was wondering, how come he hasn't died yet? Nothing wrong with dying. As George Bush used to say, bring it on. Why not? Look, you're all good people, aren't you? Aren't you going to go to heaven? Why not go to heaven? It's a nice place. You know that story which I told? I told this story once at a funeral service in many years ago. It's about the two people, the man and the woman, and they've been married for so many years, you know, just like Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip. They've been together for such a long time. And I've seen this many times, that when one dies, the other one dies a short time afterwards. And this happened to these disciples in Perth. They died within days of each other. And because they were both very good people, they appeared in heaven together. And the angel who met them said to them, you've both been very good people, so you're now in heaven, and I've come to show you your heavenly rewards. And he took the couple to this mansion, this huge house overlooking the cliffs with million-dollar views. It was bigger than the Istana of the Sultan of Selangor. It was huge. And the man, as soon as he saw the size of that mansion, he said, someone on my salary can't afford government property tax. Is that it's the same in Malaysia? The bigger the house, the more tax you have to pay? Is that the case? Imagine in Istana how much that would cost if you weren't the Sultan. So, the angel said, look, there's no government up in heaven, so you don't have to pay any tax. It's all for free. And then he took them inside the mansion. And you wouldn't believe the furnishing there. There's these beautiful chandeliers, 20 times the size of these. There was the biggest plasma screen TV you've ever seen, 50 foot wide. And the angel said, I know you like EPL, the soccer. He said, whatever team you support, you can watch on this 50 foot wide TV screen. And I guarantee whichever team you support, it always wins, because this is heaven. And he took them even into the toilet. Even the toilet bowl was made of solid gold. And that button I was talking about, which you press to flush, that was a 20-carat diamond. And when you pressed it, it wasn't water which came out. What came out was Chanel number 5. It was heaven. And the man said, look, this is too expensive. And all these burglars will come up and steal it. I won't be able to afford the insurance. Angel said, sir, this is heaven. We don't have burglars in heaven, so no insurance. And then he took them down into the garage. A triple garage. And the first car was this all-terrain vehicle, this four-wheel drive. Huge. And he said, this is the most powerful car in the whole universe. It goes everywhere. Have you seen these vehicles on the TV, you know, which goes over the rivers and goes up the mountains? This was even more powerful than that. This could even go up waterfalls. And the next car was one of these stretch limousines. You know, like you see in Hollywood, you know, at the Oscars, and these little stars come out, this huge vehicle. Now, this was one huge stretch limousine. It was so big, they had a swimming pool inside. And the last car was the best of all. It was a limited edition Ferrari. Red with a sunroof. All you men, sometimes that's what men like. The idea of a Ferrari, a big red sports car. Wouldn't you like one of those? Trouble is, in KL traffic, it would be a waste of time. And that's what he said. What's the point of having a sports car? The traffic, first of all, and those policemen with speed cameras. And the angel said, look, there's no traffic jam up in heaven. Wouldn't it be wonderful going to work up in heaven, not having to worry about traffic jam? And he said also, there are no policemen with speed cameras. There's no speed limit up in heaven. You can go as fast as you like. And the reason is, if you have an accident, it doesn't matter, you're already dead. So then he opened the doors. And on the opposite side of the road to the mansion was this amazing, immaculate 18-hole golf course. And the angel said, not only do we know how you love fast cars, we also knew you love playing golf until you got sick. So we decided, as your heavenly reward, to build a golf course on the opposite side of the road to your mansion. And I will tell you, sir, said the angel, that golf course was designed by Tiger Woods himself. You remember when he was running away from his wife, driving the car, and he hit the tree? He had a near-death experience. He left his body up to heaven just long enough to design the golf course and then come back again. But the man said, look, sir, look, angel. That is a very high-class golf club. Only very wealthy people, elite people, get elected to golf clubs like that. You're not like even in Malaysia, there are some clubs you have to know very, very important people or be very wealthy to join. And the angel said, sir, look, you don't have to worry about that. You are already a member of that golf club. Not a life member, a death member. Actually, I was suggesting that to the BTF the other day, because they were raising funds. They still haven't got life membership. Do you have membership of the temple? Or if it's a Buddhist organization, you should have not just life memberships. We've got life membership of our Buddhist society in West Australia for only $300. And I've been trying to get our committee, because we're Buddhist, to have 7 life memberships. You know, so when you get reincarnated, you're already a member. And we can give like you can become a member for the next seven lifetimes for only $1,500, which means you get the last two lifetimes free. It's very good value for money. So if you want to raise funds for the temple or for your Buddhist group, see if you can give seven lifetime memberships. So they can be a member in the next lifetime as well. Anyway, so as soon as the angel left, this man started getting angry at his wife. You stupid wife, you terrible wife, I hate you wife, you're an awful wife, why do you do this to me wife? And the wife was really surprised. How can you get angry when you've got this beautiful mansion and you watch your soccer on the 50-foot wide TV and you never get upset because your team always wins? You've got your Ferrari sports car. I saw you looking at those magazines and drooling over a sport. You can go as fast as you like. You've got your golf course over the road. Why are you so angry at me?
Because, wife.
Am I any good getting angry? I do really try, but it's very hard as a monk to act out the role of an angry husband. I just don't have experience, so please forgive me.
Because, wife, if it wasn't for all that healthy food you gave me, I could have been up here many years ago.
Why are you afraid of dying? You got your Ferrari sports car waiting for you and your golf club. Bring it on. No, but anyway, this going back to Jenny and Steve, I realized why Steve wasn't dying. I turned around to Jenny and told her, have you given your husband permission to die yet? It's one of those beautiful moments of a life as a monk when you can see things very deeply and you saw what the problem was and you got it 100% right. So Jenny jumped up on the bed, put her arms around her husband who was dying, and says, Steve, I love you very much. I give you permission to die. Please, go. It's one of those beautiful moments when both started crying and I just let them say goodbye to each other. Next day he died. The only thing which was keeping him alive, which was in great pain, postponing the inevitable, was the last thing he wanted to do to the person he loved the most, was to hurt her by dying. He did need his wife's permission. Then he could go with a happy, free heart. And isn't it the case, you can understand, the last thing we'd ever want to do is to give pain and suffering to the people we love the most. So that's why people stay, they push, they try, and they endure such great discomfort and suffering, trying to keep alive, so they don't hurt the people they love the most, their family. So please, if that's a relation of yours or a good friend, please, when it gets past the point of no return, when it's only a matter of time, please say to them, I give you permission to die. I love you so much, I'll miss you, but I want you to be free and happy. You can die with my blessing. It becomes one of those beautiful moments in life where we don't cling to the people we love. In fact, our love is so strong that we let them go. And that's a beautiful act of love. And the last thing I wanted to mention, because all temples, all Buddhist organizations, even this one, they're always raising money for something or other. So please, you know, you can't take it with you. And if you leave it to your children, they will just spend it on useless things. So why not give them an inheritance they can't spend? by developing a really, really good monasteries and temples. I say you can't take it with you, but I heard a story of this lawyer. You know, lawyers always want to find loopholes. And this lawyer found a loophole. Very good. How he could take his money with him. He was on his deathbed, so he was thinking about all of this, and so he got this brilliant idea. And he told his wife, go to the bank, draw out as much money as you can in $100 bills, because that's the highest denomination in Australia, $100 bills, and fill two big suitcases with the $100 bills and place them in the attic directly above my bed so that when I die, I can grab them as I go up to heaven. Good idea. So she did as she was told. She put those two suitcases in the attic just above his bed. And after he died, she went up there the next day, they were still there. Said, stupid man, stupid man. He should have put them in the room underneath his bed, because I know where he went.
So stingy.
So if you let go of clinging, you have a much happier, more peaceful life. You can be like a bird. You can laugh because you're not worried about what happened in the past. You're not worried about what might happen in the future. You can enjoy today. Never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. So enjoy the day. This is not just Ajahn Brahm teaching. That's from the Bhadekarata Suttas. Let go of the past. Let go of the future. Let go of all this worry and guilt. Be free. The past, just a memory. The future is totally uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen next. So much so, I hardly make plans anymore. Because I found out through experience, maybe you might share this experience with me, when I don't make a plan, things go wrong. That happened to you when you don't plan enough, things go wrong. But I found out when I do make a plan, they go wrong anyway. Either way, I lose. So I prefer not to make plans. That way I can enjoy it before it all goes wrong. So keep it tentative and enjoy the day. And that way you're not clinging to anything. If you do make plans, and this is important, especially any of you in business here. If you do make plans, make them so rubbery you can bend them in all directions. You can adapt at a moment's notice. Because so much frustration and anger comes when we make such firm, unbendable, unyielding plans. We can't let them go to get another plan. We can't change. We can't adapt. That's one of the reasons why people's businesses fail. You have to, as the word says, turn on a dime. Change your business strategy because of changing financial situations and circumstances. You've got to be adaptable. The plans are only tentative because the future is uncertain and you need to respond appropriately. Having too many fixed plans limits how you may respond. So if you do have plans, make them out of rubber, not out of concrete. And then you'll have a much more wonderful time. So I've been talking for far too long. So I want, as usual, so I want now to open the session up to questions and answers, to Q&A. So you can ask any question about what I've said, or what I haven't said, or about anything else, about something to do with Buddhism or meditation or life. So now the floor is yours to interrogate me. The time for the three C's, comments, questions, and complaints. So who's going to ask the first question?
Friends, if you have questions, please write them down. The helpers are going around. Just raise your hand if you need a piece of paper and a pen.
Whoever asks the first question will get a special prize tonight. I will give them free haircut. I'm very good at that. No, I won't do that to you. Yes, oh, Venerable Sir, thank you. He doesn't need a free haircut, he's got one already. How do we manage our anger? Now, anger is not something which suddenly arises. It actually grows, maybe over a short time, maybe over a longer time. I once compared it to how do we deal with like a big tree. If the tree is already very mature and very solid, it's very hard to take that out of the way. If that tree is a small sapling, you can actually pull it out with your hands. If you leave it for too long, it gets so strong, it really does become a problem. So trick number one is to try and catch the anger early before it gets so strong that you can't do much about it, much with it. So you can see it coming up. Once you start to see it coming up, this is called mindfulness. You can start to see it growing inside, you're getting more frustrated, more angry, until it sort of bursts out with speech or violence. If you can catch it early, it's pretty easy to stop. So your mindfulness has to catch it earlier and earlier and earlier. And also, once you start catching it earlier and earlier and earlier, you start to see the reasons why you get angry. Now one reason, there's many reasons, one reason which most people don't appreciate is that you're angry because you're all so tired. Basically, you're worn out. And because you're tired, you haven't had enough rest. Sometimes it's so easy to upset you. And that upset turns to anger, often at the people we love the most. A lot of anger in our communities will stop if we had good night's sleeps, if we rested more. Now this is such a simple thing, but very effective. What's it like when you haven't rested? You become grumpy. Your mind is actually quite brittle. So a few things really upset you. If you've rested very peacefully, your body is relaxed, your mind is relaxed, your mind is like maybe a sponge, you know, you can't break it. It's just so soft and pliable. So you don't get angry so much. Anger is caused by the fact we don't rest enough, we don't know how to relax. Which is why if you come to, say, meditation retreats, if you learn how to relax, your anger gets less and less and less. And other people notice it. Venerable Sir, there was this one Sri Lankan man in Perth who told me this story. He was what we call in Buddhism a Waisak Buddhist. A Waisak Buddhist is a person who only goes to the temple once a year. He was one of these Waisak Buddhists, but he was also an engineer working in a government department, and his boss, he was an Australian man, his boss he called a boss from hell. Many of you may have a boss from hell.
They torture you, they shout at you, you work hard for them and they never praise you, they never show any consideration for all the extra work you put in, your work is never good enough, they never sort of say anything kind to you at all, they push you and you work harder for them and they still shout at you and scold you. Have you got a boss from hell? This is what you should do to your boss from hell. This boss from hell was so angry all the time. In 3 months, it only took 3 months, he totally changed to become this very sensitive, kind boss. You know, he would say, thank you for doing that extra work. You know, you've done a really good job there. In fact, because the boss changed, this Sri Lankan man wanted to work even harder for him. You get much more done with encouragement than you ever get through scolding. But the Sri Lankan Waisak Buddhist couldn't help himself but say, boss, you've changed. Now you're a much nicer boss now. You don't get so angry. If you don't mind me asking, what have you been doing? And you know what the boss said? The boss said, I found this wonderful Buddhist temple with this English Australian monk who taught me meditation. And he said, no, I don't need to get so angry anymore. And that Sri Lankan man said, but that's my temple. But he wouldn't go there to meditate, he'd just go there for ceremonies once a year. Once he saw how a little bit of meditation and just changing his attitudes, when he saw how that had changed his boss from hell, now he comes every week. He actually saw how anger does disappear with some meditation and some change in one's attitudes to life. It's a waste of time fighting life and getting angry at it. Does it help? So you come here, you get less and less angry, more happy, rest more, and then you'll live longer, and also you'll find you're a much easier person to live with. But don't forget resting more. Too many of us work so hard that we're on an edge most of our time. And small things make us angry. You rest a lot, and then those small things don't make you angry anymore. So thank you for asking that, Venerable. Oh, we got the written questions there. Don't worry, we'll do a handwriting test afterwards to find out who asked this. Dearest Ajahn Brahm, thank you, you're awesome. I agree with you. Why not? That's why. Thank you. If anybody ever praises you, please accept it. I think that's what I taught last time I came here. They praise you, oh, thank you very much. Remember, that's when they say that, put one finger to your ear so it doesn't go out the other ear. It sticks. Question, you have been talking about letting go of pain and hurtful events. How will a person be able to let go of happy, wonderful memories, i.e. letting go of attachments? Most of you are attached to the painful memories. That's why I talked about those ones. You're not so attached to happy memories. Those are the ones you let go of. Stupid. So you please let go of the pain. Then you won't get angry. You won't feel guilty. So let go of the unpleasant stuff, first of all. And cultivate the happiness. And I'm saying this for a purpose. When you cultivate the happiness of life, that gives your mind a lot of energy and power. It's called in Pali, Piti Sukha. It's inspiring. It makes you a better person, more energetic, more powerful, and eventually you get into some powerful meditations. There's a saying of the Buddha, Sukhino Chittang Samadhiyati. From happiness, the mind becomes still, attains samadhi. From happiness.
That's why it's good to cultivate the happy mind, and your meditation takes off and gets even more happy. So, I'm now going to give you an exercise. If any of you are ever feeling depressed, lonely, upset or angry, this is what you should do. And I want all to do this. Can you put your two hands out like this? Two hands out like this. Very good. Now bring them in, follow me, and give yourself a nice hug. Oh, there. Ooh. Simple, you could do that. It's made you all happy and laughing just now. So you don't need to see psychologists. They cost a lot of money. Do it yourself. And what you're doing is there, you value yourself, you appreciate yourself, you love yourself. So if you cultivate that type of happiness, that doesn't actually lead to attachments. That leads to stillness and big peace. The Buddha never said to let go of the happiness of inspiration and the mind. We've got to know the right things to let go of. There was this, this disciple in Perth, and this Australian man. He learned his Buddhism and he took the five precepts. The five Buddhist precepts: not deliberately killing a living being, not stealing, not committing adultery, not lying, not taking alcohol and non-medicinal drugs. Everything was easy except the alcohol. Because, you know, he was in business. He had to go to these receptions and parties and these conferences. And he said he was at this conference, and, you know, it was the break time in the evening, and one of his friends brought him, you know, the plate of drinks. He said, "No, just have a beer." And this new Buddhist said, "No, I'm sorry, I can't take any alcohol." And his friend said, "Why not?" He said, "Because I'm a Buddhist. I'm a Buddhist now." And his friend said, "Oh, you're a Buddhist, that's wonderful. And we know all about Buddhism. Buddhism is all about letting go. Come on, let go and have a drink." It was letting go of the wrong thing. So it was big trouble for him, but he solved the problem. He said the next time he went to one of these parties, he never said he was a Buddhist anymore. When they came with the tray of drinks, he said, "Sorry, I can't take any alcohol, doctor's orders." You know, no one ever questions that. It must be terrible, but never mind, hope you get better soon. And when he told me that was his trick to refuse alcohol at parties, say, "I can't drink because of doctor's orders," I told him, "Aren't you keeping one precept by breaking another? You're lying, you're healthy." And that's where he caught me out. I made a mistake. He said, "No, I'm not lying, Ajahn Brahm. You should know better than that. It is doctor's orders." As the Venerable Monks would know, in several sutras, the Buddha compared himself to a doctor. It was the doctor's orders. Dr. Buddha's orders. It's a good excuse. I've got lots of questions now, so I should start answering them quickly now. Very good. Okay. So no more questions, otherwise we'll be here until next week. How do you explain rebirth to a person of another religion who does not believe in rebirth? You tell them, "It's all right. You won't believe in rebirth in this lifetime, but you certainly will believe in rebirth in your next life." Is it okay to be a sports freak? The reason is one needs to look after his or her body. Is it okay to look after the body? It's not that I'm afraid of dying, just afraid of not dying. Not dying means not dying of illnesses. Example, cancer, diabetes. You've got to die of something. So anyway, it's okay to be a sports freak. It's okay to be a sports freak, but the trouble is, you know, to be a Buddhist and to be a sports freak is very difficult. Many years ago, you know, because I was living in a non-Buddhist country, and even, you know, if I was in a Buddhist country, want to try and encourage interfaith activities, you know, and try and break down the barriers between all the different great religions. And I thought one way we could do that is, you know, like we could have a soccer team. You know, the Buddhists versus the Muslims versus the Christians. Because, you know, that means, you know, you play together, you know, you become friends together. But then I had to stop that because I thought, if I start a Buddhist soccer team in my temple, it would have to follow Buddhist principles. First of all, letting go. If the other team wanted the ball, let it go, pass it to them. And compassion. Now, if the other team can't score a goal, you score a goal for them, own goal. Compassion. That's why we're not very good at sport. Maybe there may be too many Buddhists in the Malaysian soccer team. That's one of the reasons why. You know, let it keep scoring own goals and let it go. Now, it's okay to look after your body playing sport, but one thing with sport, which I must admit I don't like about sport these days, modern sport, it's far too sort of, you know, win at all costs. And that's actually, life is like that these days, win at all costs. Enjoying the game is more important than winning. This is a true story. I loved playing soccer as a kid. The last game of soccer I ever played in my life, it was only sort of a second team in the college, we were just playing for fun. And 9 of the other team turned up, 11 of us turned up. We're about 5 or 6-0 up at half time. It's a stupid game, too one-sided. So at the half-time break, I went up to my captain and said, is it all right if I play on the other side for the second half? You know, make a game of it. He was so angry at me. No, of course you can't play for the opposite side. And I didn't want to play anymore. Because for me, really winning and losing wasn't that important as enjoying the game. If I lost by a goal or 2 goals, but you had a really good game, you know, you really tried hard, I'd love that. Just like in life, it's not winning or losing. It's about just enjoying the whole contest. And that's what I think is important in life. But when it's win at all costs, when it's get the contract at all costs, or when it's get, you know, your lover at all costs, it's not worth it anymore. What are you doing that for? As I used to say here, is really life all about being the richest person in a cemetery? So it's good to look after your body, but don't be afraid of dying. We all die one day. I like to just get it over and done with. I would like to ask for something. The greatest act of love is to let someone go, and the past is just memory. It's time to let go. I very agree with it, but there is someone I love so deeply, and I just couldn't let it go. I know that I should let her go, but I just couldn't do it. Do you have any idea on how to let go of someone which is not belongs to you? Thanks, Sadhu. It's kind of hard and hurt as well. Look, remember, if you really love that person, you want her to be happy. So, you know, you want to think about, you know, the other partner. That's why I say the greatest act of love is like that person who is dying, to let them go. You're thinking about them. If you're thinking, oh, I can't do it, you're thinking about yourself. It's selfishness, it's not real love. Which is stronger? The love to your partner or the love to your child? Duty to your child is more. You can, you know, divorce and get another partner, but you always have your child. That's for life. And sometimes your child misbehaves, but you still love them. No, your husband misbehaves, get out of here, divorce. There's a deeper type of love to a child. And a child, you can let them go. You let them get married or get a job on the other side of the world. You miss them, but you just want them to be happy. Now that's the sort of love you should have to your partner. That higher form of love, like the love you have to a child, to your child. Even if they leave and go a long way away, they go with your blessing. You miss them. But you're satisfied that they are happy. That's all you want. See if you can do that type of love. The love which can let your children go. What is your advice on the book, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle? Does what it said lead one to enlightenment? Well, it gets very far. The Power of Now is very good. But you can actually hear it here, which is much cheaper than getting book. You just come here and get it for free. So the only difference is the cost. This is value for money. And also, Eckhart Tolle doesn't tell jokes. But it's all very good stuff. And most of this stuff comes from Buddhism. And it's amazing that Buddhist supplies all these amazing teachings, but you know, these other people, they go and write books about it and make all the money. The Ajahn, in the Art of Disappearing book, that's one of my books. It's very hard to get copies of that book, The Art of Disappearing. That's my latest book. The reason is because they've all disappeared. Can Ajahn please explain on letting go of mind consciousness? I don't understand. Oh, that's a very difficult thing. That's when you really, really let go big time. When everything. If you let go big time, it's like the simile of these hot air balloons. Have you seen these big balloons which go up into the sky? Now imagine you're going in a hot air balloon and you go as high as you can go. And you think, how can I go higher? How can I go further? And you realize you've got all this stuff in the basket of the balloon you have to throw out. So you throw out everything, the sandbags, your lunch, your thermos, throw out everything. And so there's only you in that balloon. And you go so high and you can't go any further. How can you go further? Then you realize, I've got to throw away the basket. So you untie the basket and you hang on to the ropes. Then you go really high. You really let go of something very difficult, the basket. And how can I go higher? How can I go higher? And then you realize the only way to go higher is for you to disappear. And then the balloon goes all the way to Nirvana, the highest it can go. And in that simile, throwing away all of your possessions means letting go of your material possessions. You go so high. And this is like what monks do, monks and nuns. They throw away all their material possessions. They've got nothing in the basket. Just them and the basket and the balloon. So what do? The basket. I've got to let go of the basket. In this simile, the basket stands for your body, which for many of you are basket cases. Mine anyway, I'm very old now. So you throw your body away. That's when you get into the deep meditations which transcend the body. And it's only just you, the mind, holding on to the balloon. The only way to go farther is for the mind to let go and disappear. And then the balloon goes up to Nibbana. That might give you some understanding, using a simile, of how to let go of mind consciousness. But that's the toughest thing to do. That's, you know, that's enlightenment. What is your opinion about the principle of the law of attraction? Is this principle will decide a person's life journey? The law of attraction is that book, The Secret, attracts stupid people. You got that book, stupid people, they attract and they buy it. That's the law of attraction, you gullible people. It does not work, it's a scam. But the thing is, what it does, it buys into people what you want. You know, you just want to get that $10,000 check in your post office box. You know, you want to get that person you really love. You know, you girls, you want to marry Justin Bieber. Just think about him, just think about him, visualize him, have faith. The law of attraction. Yeah, great chance that's going to happen, isn't it? So look,
Just because you think about it and imagine it, it's not going to happen, is it? So you've got to be reasonable, not stupid. But the point is, we think it's going to happen. I just came through Changi Airport today, and they got a new promotion, be a Changi millionaire. $1 million, Singapore dollars. You know, if you buy $30 of goods and you enter this competition, and there's a big queue of people waiting to join the competition. Actually stupid. What chance is there of you winning that? Hardly anything at all. There's more chance you're going to miss your flight by standing in queues. So come on, be reasonable and don't... because greed and desire, that's what the problem is. I just also read that there's all these scams. There was one poor lady, I think it was in Malaysia, that she went online and there was supposed to be this American general on the chat line who wanted $2 million or something, 2 million ringgit, I think. 5 million, yeah, you all read that. How stupid you can be, you know, thinking you get easy money like that. Or like, now going to lottery or going to casino. Absolutely stupid. When was it the last time I told the person who had that dream of the five angels? Do you know that story? No, apparently you don't because you're putting faces. This happened in Perth. It just tells you how gullible people can be. He had a dream one night, a very clear dream. He dreamt of five angels, and they lined up, and each angel gave him five big pots of gold coins. 25 big pots of gold, worth a fortune. And when he received the last pot of gold, he woke up. He realized it was a dream, but one of those very clear dreams you have every now and again. He looked around the room. There were no angels in the bedroom, but even worse, no pots of gold. It was a dream. So he went down to breakfast, and that morning, his wife had made him five boiled eggs and five pieces of toast for breakfast. What's with this number five? When he read the newspaper, the morning newspaper, he couldn't believe that the day was the 5th of May, the 5th day of the 5th month. He thought this must be an omen, so he turned to the sports pages, the horse racing. There is a race course in Perth named after the famous English race course called Ascot, A-S-C-O-T, five letters. And you can imagine what he felt when he saw that afternoon, race number five, horse number five, was called Five Angels. You couldn't believe it. Five Angels was running that afternoon in race number five, horse number five. This was, you only get omens like this maybe once a lifetime, if at all. So he never told his wife, because women can't understand these things. At lunchtime, he went to his bank. To keep the lucky number five, he took out $5,000. $5,000. Because if you're going to win, you might as well win big. And he went to the racetrack that afternoon, and he put $5,000 to win. He actually chose the fifth bookmaker in line, have all these windows. He took the fifth window to keep the lucky number five. $5,000 to win. Horse number five, race number five, five angels. He knew the lucky number five couldn't be wrong. The lucky number five wasn't wrong. His horse came in fifth. Gullible, believing dreams. So don't go worrying about laws of attraction. If you want to be rich, I'll tell you how to be rich.
Ajahn Brahm's guaranteed way of becoming rich. Work hard, spend little. I've got some more. Very good. Here we go. Dear Ajahn Brahm, I find it very difficult to practice as a layperson with a family. In this 21st century, we have to work and spend so much of our time working just to provide the basic necessities for your family. How do we balance between material necessities and spirituality? Please advise. Or having a family. If you haven't had kids yet, get cat, get dog. You get much more emotional satisfaction from a dog. They never wet their pants. That they never wake up in the middle of the night screaming. They're always happy to see you. They never talk back at you. And they're much cheaper too. You don't have to save up money to send them to college and university overseas. Oh, you get much... There's enough children in this world already. We need to have a smaller population. But if you already have sort of a family, then the thing to do is actually to learn to be more efficient with the use of your time. You don't always have to respond to your little kids. This, an Australian girl in Perth, she had two young children, maybe about 2 and 4 years of age, and she wanted to try and meditate, just to relax, to de-stress. But every time she sat down, the two kids pulled her long hair, climbed all over her, teased her so she couldn't have a moment's peace. Until one day she got so frustrated, she said, right, I don't care what you do, I'm going to sit down and meditate for 15 minutes. So she sat down, and as soon as she sat down, her older girl pulled her, mummy, 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 I need you. And the younger kid, mummy, 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 you know, you must help me. And she didn't move. She could pull their hair, climb all over, she sat down. And then the kids started getting, it's amazing just how smart little children could be. The four-year-old said, mummy, 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 David, no, I think it was a three-year-old, mummy, mummy, David's turned on the gas. Mummy, mummy, Caroline has got the knife out of the kitchen drawer. Mummy, mummy. But the mummy said, I don't care if you blow the house up or stab each other, I'm going to meditate. And she did that. She just sat there, and they're making all these desperate threats, and then they went quiet. And after 15 minutes, when she came out of her meditation, the two kids were playing quietly in the corner. They hadn't blown up the house, they hadn't stabbed each other. It was just kids trying to get mummy's attention. And once mummy said, no, this time is for me, the kids understood. And from that time on, she could always meditate, and the kids said, okay, mummy's having a meditation. And they would look after herself. You mothers, you don't trust your children enough, even little children. You just say, no, it's mummy's meditation time. The kids will look after themselves. Because you need some time too. The trouble is, you can't meditate. Oh, what's Caroline doing? What's David doing? That's the trouble. You worry too much. So sometimes a good mother can just let go for 15 minutes, knowing 15 minutes for herself, she's going to be a much smarter, wiser, kinder mother afterwards. So if you have a family, that's one thing you can possibly do. Thank you for this opportunity. In regards to letting go, is it more similar to forgiving? Forgiving is part of letting go, or forgetting. And it's very difficult to forget these things, but at least we can forgive. We can let go, so we can acknowledge, we can forgive. And the most important thing about the toilet paper simile is we learn. And we learn how to let go. And if you have been cheated, you know, if you have been abused, then you learn never to put yourself in that situation again. You learn from it. As one very high-flying business leader told me at this big conference with the whole cabinet of Australia attending, he said that we call this forward failing. So that's a wonderful way of looking at it. You make a mistake, call it forward failing. Whether it's in business or in life, you fail, but it's forward. In other words, you learn from it. You learn not to make the same mistake again. You learn to be a bit more careful. And if you learn from that mistake, then it's forward failing. So it's not forgetting, it's forgiving and learning. That's what I say. If forgetting, then we should learn from our mistakes, right, which requires to remember. Exactly. We remember it as a nice learning experience. And also, if you do make a mistake, please share it with other people, let them know, because it makes them laugh. When I make mistakes, I like sharing it with other people. Like the time that one of my Sri Lankan disciples told me that their parent had died, and would I do the funeral service for them? I said, yeah, of course I will do that for you. So I went to the chapel to lead the funeral service, you know, out of gratitude for this young Sri Lankan monk who looked after me, fed me for such a long time. So I was the MC for this service, so I got up and say, we've come here today to do the funeral service for my disciple's mother who passed away, such a sad thing. And I'd been going for about 2 or 3 minutes when a Sri Lankan lady sitting in the front stood up and said, it's not me who's died, it's my husband. You know, we all make mistakes sometimes, just got the wrong person, that's all. That was a wonderful funeral service. After that, no one could be serious. All the time, I think I confessed this the other day, because people ask me, why is it we do all this chanting at ceremonies in Pali? Why can't we do the chanting, say, in English, so everyone could understand it? The reason is that I know at least one occasion, maybe more than that, when I was doing some chanting at a wedding, I'd made a mistake and I did the funeral chanting instead. But because it was in Pali, no one knew. But it's okay, the couple is still very happily married. So when you make a mistake, tell people, it makes them laugh. That's why we don't do it in English. You don't know what we're doing, so you're fine. Okay, that's a family question. Okay, last question, here we go. Is having a run a type of meditation? As long as you run in circles. Now that's meditation, because the most important type of meditation, don't try and get somewhere. The whole idea of meditation is being here. Not trying to get somewhere, but being here. I'll probably mention this the next 2 days. There's a lot of fun in this talk, but every now and again I give you a very profound teaching. And this is one of the teachings from Ajahn Chah. He said, you meditate to let go of things, not to get more things. Not to get stream winning, not to get arahat, not to get jhanas, not to get psychic powers, not to get attainments, but to let go of things. If you understand that, we meditate to let go, not to attain, then you understand why if you run around in a circle, that's very good meditation, because you're not getting anywhere. Why do youngsters have high chance to involve in suicide, drug, alcohol, and other bad things compared to other ages? I think the other ages, they know how to not get caught. Well, the youngsters haven't learned that yet. But especially like with suicide, old people commit suicide too. But you know, with suicide, that's one of the big problems in our life, because every time there is a suicide, you don't see it coming. Because people come to me in the difficult situations, I know many, 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 many people whose child, son and daughter have committed suicide. And from my own experience, the common factor of all of those suicides is the parents, the teachers, and the friends did not see it coming at all. There was no signs. No signs at all. Because this is the pain inside the heart which no eye can see. And even the mother and father, you don't see it either. And it's usually intelligent, happy, you know, successful at school kids. They're the ones who commit suicide. It's weird. Those kids who aren't doing so well, they don't usually. It's the high achievers do. And again, one of the problems is because look at what you say to your children. Reflect on what you say. How many times you tell them off? How many times do you praise them? Usually, if there's a problem, we have to tell them off. When it's not a problem, we keep quiet. So what children hear, you know, from their teachers, even from their friends, is always criticism. Maybe 20 criticisms to even one small bit of praise. Even very earlier, when you said, someone said here, Ajahn Brahm, you're awesome. I said, yes, I am. I did that for a reason. Because if we don't receive praise, no one will give praise. So if someone praises you, you're a most wonderful wife, tell your husband, yes, I am. You're very smart and wise and perceptive. Yes, I am a wonderful wife. Please accept it, and then they'll give more. And give that to your kids as well. So please, when you're talking to your children, don't just say your room is dirty, you know, tidy up, you know, you're staying up too late watching the computer. If you are going to criticize them, please praise them 2 times for every criticism. And the real how much you appreciate and love them. So they're not just hearing that they are hopeless. It takes a lot of effort to do that. But please do. Build up your children with praise. How to overcome a bully, since bully can be a physical bully. Look, if they bully one person, they usually bully many people in the school. So you try and stick together. So have the anti-bully gang. So that way, that at least you can have your friends who meet together. Because they'll only bully you when you're alone, when you're with other people, because all bullies are cowards. And number two, if you are not a bully, teach your kids, if you're not a bully but you see another bully bullying somebody else, please intervene. Don't just let that happen. Because a lot of the kids in the school, they don't want to get involved, which allows the bullies to have a lot of influence on the weaker kids in the class. If the average kids also stood up against bullying, that is the most effective way to stop it. So if you've got an average kid, no, it doesn't get bullied and it's not a bully, tell them, please, protect the weaker kids in your class. That is your duty. All of you, the average kids, stand up to the bully. They may not bully you, but if you see them bullying someone else, that is your problem. You stand up to that bully. Of course, the teachers can help us at all. What is the benefit of chanting Paritta? What is the benefit of chanting? I know that the chanting, especially my chanting, is very, very powerful for getting rid of ghosts. Now, monks like me are the very best ghostbusters. The reason is, when I chant at a haunted house, my chanting is so bad that no ghost can stand it. Oh, I'm getting out of here, I'm getting out of here. That's why. Because look, people are far too superstitious. All this chanting, I already mentioned to you, I messed up once. And I did the funeral chanting at a marriage. That was Paritta chanting and funeral chanting. It didn't matter. They still thought it was very good and I had a wonderful time. And still give a big donation to my temple. I never actually told them. I should have really given the donation back. But the chanting of the Paritta, it can work, to be serious, on 2 levels, but very rarely works. Sometimes it does. It works, number one, if the monk knows what they're talking about, who's doing the chanting. Because some of those chants are very powerful teachings. So powerful they can actually get the monk to be very, very strong mind and can actually do things. And the other is it can actually bring these heavenly beings around to help out. So there's many, I can't tell my own personal stories, but one of the stories about the power of chanting, the power of paritta chanting, is this Thai monk. He was a forest monk. And when he went to visit one of our monasteries in California, in San Francisco, the monk who was receiving him at the airport just asked to look at his passport to make sure that his visa was proper so he could stay the number of days he was supposed to stay. So when he saw the visa of this Thai forest monk, he was so surprised to see this Thai forest monk had a diplomatic visa for the rest of his life, no expiry date, to enter in the United States whenever he wanted and go through the diplomatic channels. That's where you don't queue up, straight through. And he said, how on earth in time of Homeland Security did you get a diplomatic visa? This is true story. This is not one of my jokes. This is true. I got to say that. How did you get that visa? And this is the story he told, and it's been corroborated. It's actually quite a well-known story now. NASA in Houston, Texas, the National Aeronautical Space Agency, you know, which sends up all these space stations and all these probes to Mars and everywhere. This is NASA. They were installing a new mainframe computer in their headquarters in Houston, costing many hundreds of millions of dollars. Once it was installed, they couldn't boot it up. They couldn't make it work. There was some problem with it. So they called in every professor and IT expert from the whole of the country, flying them in first class as soon as they possibly could, because every hour that computer wasn't working was costing them millions. No one could fix it. There was one Thai Buddhist engineer who was working there, and he mentioned, if all the best experts in the whole country can't fix this computer, the big mainframe computer, perhaps, he said, it must be something supernatural. He said, I know you guys don't believe in that, but it doesn't cost us anything because there's a Thai monk staying in the temple in Houston who can come up and just give him a cup of tea and he'll do whatever you want. I don't know if he had a cup of tea, I don't know what cup of Pepsi or whatever that Thai monk liked. So they invited this Thai monk, just because it wouldn't cost them anything, into the mainframe computer room in Houston, in the headquarters of NASA. And he meditated and chanted some paritta chants. And as soon as he finished, this is no exaggeration, as soon as he finished, that computer worked perfectly. And they were so impressed. They used their connections, because NASA has such connections, to get this forest monk a diplomatic visa with no expiry date, just in case they needed to call him at a moment's notice. So if you're having trouble with your computer, namo tassa bhagavato, ask the Venerables to come and do some paritta chants. You never know. It doesn't cost very much. That's a true story. It actually happened. So it's amazing. Oh, I'll tell you another story. This is even funnier. There was, again, these are true stories. Nothing could improve on the joy of a true story. This is one of the young men who spent about 6 or 8 months at my monastery in Perth, just, you know, learning some meditation, learning some more Buddhism. And afterwards, you know, he went back to Germany where he lived. And he told me that before he came, he was a student at university, in one of the big universities in Germany. He said the first day on campus, He was passing the ATM machine. And as he passed the ATM machine, in his words, he said the ATM machine made a gurgling sound as he passed. And he took that to mean, like, welcome to the campus, as a friendly gesture from the ATM to a new student. And so from that time on, he'd always say hello to the ATM machine and be kind to it. And after many months of doing loving kindness to that ATM machine, he was having his lunch sitting on a bench just within 20 meters of that ATM machine. No one had been close to it for the time he was having his lunch when he heard the gurgling sound again. And he looked around at his ATM machine, which he'd spread loving kindness towards, and a 20 euro note came out. And he was so shocked because no one had been close to it. He took out that 20 euro note, waved it around, does this belong to anybody? No one claimed it, so he put it in his pocket and spent it. So even ATM machines respond to loving kindness. So if you're short of a few ringgit, go to your ATM machine, chant the Metta Sutta, nice ATM, nice ATM. And who knows, you may get a 50 ringgit note come out. So there is some benefit in chanting, especially in front of an ATM machine. But don't let anybody see you, you might get taken away. Is modern science be overtaken by Buddhism? I am a modern scientist, a radical physicist. It won't overtake Buddhism. It will confirm Buddhism. It's one of the reasons I was very happy being a Buddhist and a theoretical physicist, because the two met together perfectly. And I know what I'm talking about with physics. A lot of other people, they just say all these things, they haven't got a clue what they're really talking about. I know my physics, I still keep in contact with the great physicists, even with Sir Roger Penrose. We had a dinner engagement, I only had some cup of tea. Sir Roger Penrose is probably the second most famous physicist alive today. He was the one who discovered black holes. He's Mr. Black Hole, Roger Penrose from Oxford. Brilliant guy. So I still keep in contact with these people, and I know that science and Buddhism, they can come together very easily. Science will not be overtaken by Buddhism, but Buddhism will confirm science and science will confirm Buddhism. That's why it's very easy to see how Buddhism will become stronger and stronger as science also gets strong. As the people get more educated in the different lands of our world. When they're not well educated, then people don't understand science, or they're afraid of it. The more educated you are, the more you understand the power and the strength of science, and also Buddhism. So, it's 10 o'clock now, and you guys have got to come, some of you, I hope, got to come to meditation tomorrow morning, very early. So we'll finish off today. Thank you for all coming. There's another session tomorrow night, 7 o'clock tomorrow night, a little bit earlier. So have a nice evening. We're going to just have wrap up. Very good. So don't go yet. It's important. Advertisement from my sponsor.
Dear friends, in appreciation for tonight's sharing, let us together three times say, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.